What is happening, everybody? And I can't tell you how excited and thankful I am to have y'all here joining us on Expanded Perspectives. It's me, Cam Hale. And of course, sitting next to me, my man, the baseball brother that's been running around this whole past weekend, Kyle Filson.
How's it going, everybody? Yes, I'm here in studio, Skeleton Studios, beautiful weather for Texas. Just got back from an interesting trip up to OKC, Oklahoma City.
Yeah.
For a baseball tournament, because apparently they're not allowing them here in Texas because of the quarantine. And apparently that's the way it is in a lot of states, but Oklahoma's not having it. So they were hosting a tournament, and there was a lot of teams in this thing. I think like 180 teams from Colorado, Ohio, Kansas, Louisiana, Arkansas, Texas, Oklahoma, a lot. Okay.
So, a lot.
So we got to play a team from Midland. We got to play a team from Arkansas. We played a team from Oklahoma, team from Kansas. And then the team that knocked us out of the tournament is from Crowley. So we went all that way to get beat from a team that's only 15 miles away.
But now I wanted you to tell them, because you and I were talking about this. How many people there?
Thousands.
First of all, thousands. So you would probably say you probably saw, 5,000 to 8,000 people?
Yeah, because there's so many teams that they had to do it at multiple venues. So we played Saturday at a completely different venue than we played Sunday. So if that makes sense, there's so many teams that there's not enough for the field. So they would have to do it at several different fields spread out through Oklahoma City. And when we were there, because this is a new thing that we're going through.
Yeah.
I was expecting to see people wearing face masks.
That's
stuff.
What I wanted to get into.
Not one. I mean, like, out of all the people I saw there, maybe two had face masks
maybe.
On. Now some of the shops and stuff in Oklahoma City, now they were wearing masks, like when you go to Walmart.
Yeah.
Things like that. Several of the restaurants, only the drive-thru was open. But at the ball fields, at the ballpark, there was no one wearing face masks.
Too much baseball. You couldn't yell. You can't, hey, bada, bada, bada. It's hard to go, hey.
Well, I know that they were talking about with the major leagues that they're fixing to fire that up again, that mm-hmm. there was going to still be rules like no high-fiving, no spitting tobacco or sunflower seeds. Things like that, I guess, trying to stay spread out in the dugout and things like that. But none of that was going on either. I mean, the concession stands were open. They were selling sunflower seeds. There was people chewing tobacco. The kids were high-fiving. The kids were shaking hands at the end of the game.
You think they were happy to be back out and seeing all their friends? That's the biggest thing, or seeing just being involved in something.
That was it. Like Jacob, he didn't even care that they were winning or losing. It was just nice to be outside.
A little bit of normality.
Yeah, doing something. And that was... It's not fun to go up there and just get your tails whipped, but
it's
fun.
Of it, right?
It's fun to get out there and it seemed like a little bit of normalcy. What I didn't like though was the drive up. There's a beautiful mountain range up there, Arbuckle Mountains, and I know it's good for the environment and everything, but they've installed a bunch of wind gens, and I know that's good, But golly, it kind of ruined a beautiful area because you got these pristine looking mountains. They're not like the Rocky Mountains, so settle down. But I mean, imagine even if it was the Rocky Mountains. Maybe you went to the Tetons or something like that, and you see these beautiful, majestic mountains, and then all on the top of them are wind gens. Man, I get it.
I read somewhere that what it costs to produce and the energy it takes to produce those giant wind gens, each one,
mm-hmm.
they never pay for themselves.
Really?
Yeah.
So then what's the point?
Like the maintenance and the upkeep and all, or the maintenance and the production of those wind gens. I don't know if it's true or not, but I've read it somewhere that it's like they never end up paying for themselves.
So what's the point?
I to go green? To make it look like you're trying? Like, I don't know. I need to look into that more. Probably just talking out of my butt and don't really know what I'm...
I know that Dalee's cousin, they have on their house like solar panels all over the roof.
Mm-hmm.
And they tell me they sell electricity back to their city. So not only does it pay for all theirs, but they actually make money off of it.
My son's one of the guys that he used to work with. That's what this guy went and did, was install solar panels and all that.
So if that's the thing, it's almost crazy that more people don't do it. Like, I'm thinking to myself, why aren't I doing it?
I think it's the initial sunny. Cost is the problem.
Well, sure.
Well, and then the hailstorms we get around here can be rough too. So you got to insure them. But other than that, you're good. Like, I'm with you. Why do we not have them on our roofs?
Why don't our cars all have them?
Yeah. Along the top of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's lots of things that we should be doing. Yeah. You're correct.
I mean, I'm still confused that, like, there's lots of states running out of water, like California and things like that. But, like, we're surrounded. The planet is, like, 3/4 ocean. How come?
Cost too much. Cost
we can fly to yeah. Mars, but we can't figure out a way to cheaply desalinate water.
Cost effectiveness. They just can't figure it out.
I don't believe that. Doesn't it seem like a conspiracy theory?
I'm glad that they're not doing it, because the way we are as human beings, the way our nature is, we'd have the ocean drained down to be the size of a pond before long.
Yeah, but all those monsters would be gone.
That is true. That is very, very true. That's very true. Hey, look, speaking of monsters, I've got a story here that I need to share with y'all.
Please.
AF sends this. It says this happens back in April of 2017. Goes on to say, I work in a factory during the graveyard shift from 10 p.m. to 6:30 a.m. This night, I was actually working my sixth day in a row for overtime. I have had this job for a while now, and I'm used to this kind of schedule. I'm bringing this up because typically after I get home, I'm still wide awake, and I tend to sleep later in the day. So I was totally alert when this happened. I ended up leaving work early since I'd completed a lot more orders than usual, and I was on my way home around 4:30 a.m. I turn down the side street that leads to my apartment complex, and I immediately notice it's quite dark as the street lights are not illuminated. Now, the suburb I live around uses street lights that have sensors, so they light up when people walk by them and turn off by themselves to save energy. And as I noticed it was dark, I decided to turn my brights on my car. Now, I'm only 6 blocks away from my home at this point, and I come around a small bend in the road that leads up to a children's park and the only stop sign on this street between my apartment, which is a few blocks further. I noticed something in the middle of that road. My first thought was it's someone stacked garbage that maybe blew off the curb, but it's a pile there, and it was into the street. But as I drove closer, I slowed down, and I realized that it's a person walking down the street with their back to me. It seemed like an old person. A very old person, actually, by the way that they were walking. As I slowed down a lot, because it's very odd, and I didn't know if they were going to jump out in front of my car or what, since they are well-maintained sidewalks that's less than 10 foot from them that they could be using. The next thing I notice is the clothing. This person's walking slowly, almost waddling, and was wearing a hooded jacket with the hood up and their hands inside the front pocket. They're wearing sweatpants and soaking wet house shoes without socks because there's a light rain falling. This person's about 3 car lengths away from the stop sign, and I was close now, getting ready to stop, and I ask if they needed help or anything. As soon as I was just about right behind him, adjacent to this person, which I then saw was an old man with very wrinkly and pale skin, well, he whipped around insanely fast and stared at me. My brights were still on, and I could see how pale his skin was, and then I saw the eyes. The pitch black eyes.
This is a black-eyed senior citizen?
Mm-hmm. No whites in his eyes, just black. I was immediately filled with terror and almost froze up, but I floored it and sped the last few blocks to my apartment, parked, and sprinted inside, locking all my doors and windows. Now, the next day, I realized that none of the streetlights were illuminated on my entire street when this had happened, even though it was within distance to trigger the sensors. I couldn't sleep at all that night, AF. A black-eyed senior.
I've never heard of that.
There's more that I'll have to get into later, but yeah, there's black-eyed seniors. So that... Look, we've always kicked it around with the black-eyed kids. Now there's more black-eyed old people. There's... Look... Every time I think of a story like this, and I've said it before, I think of the old man in the movie, or in the video, rather, the music video of The Unforgiven.
Mm.
That's what I think
right,
of.
Yeah, right? Yeah, that's
like
a good
creepy
analogy.
The old man. So
I forgot about that video. Yeah,
that dude's disturbing. So there y'all go. There's you, a black-eyed senior that you don't want to come across while you're driving home one evening.
Yeah, for sure. Check this out. We got a cool listener story. It says, hey, Cam, and hey, Kyle.
What up?
I just heard your latest podcast with Joshua Cutchin and Timothy Renner, and it made me think of an incident that happened to me in high school almost 15 years ago.
Yes.
I haven't thought of this in a very long time. In high school, either in 2006 or 2007, myself and 3 of my friends were hanging out at our friend Jake's house, which was in the country just outside of Carthage, Texas. If you're not familiar with Carthage, Texas, that's East Texas.
Yeah.
South of Longview, out toward Shreveport. Absolutely. We would stay up all night in those days. And this particular night, the 4 of us went walking in the woods. And at one point, we all heard someone or something walking. We heard the crunching of leaves that sounded like just like the crunching of leaves beneath our own feet. We all stopped and called out, "Hello? Is anyone out there?
Who is that?"
We got no reply, and thinking our imagination had gotten the best of us, we nervously laughed it off and continued walking. It could have been a deer or any sort of critter, I suppose, and as we continued on, we walked two by two. I was walking directly behind my friend Jake, and all of a sudden, I bumped into him because he stopped abruptly. He said, "Did y'all see that?" We all looked around and we didn't see anything unusual. He said, "I saw a woman wearing a white dress." Now at this point, I think he's pulling our leg. And I'm like, "Come on, man. Are you messing with us?" And he said, "No. Feel my arm." Well, it was a warm night and every hair on his arm and on the back of his neck were standing straight up. I think he was telling the truth, as we have been friends for many years, and if he were joking, he would have eventually told us so. The rest of us never did see anything, but I truly believe he saw what he said he saw. Don't know if there's anything to this, but after hearing the recent podcast, I thought you might find it interesting enough. I had no idea that women in white was even a thing. Thanks, love the show, Larkin. Thanks, Larkin.
That's awesome.
It's pretty cool. Yeah, I was unaware. Yeah. I mean, of course, I've heard stories of ghosts, mm-hmm. you know, like white women in white as a ghost, but I never heard them particularly involved along with Sasquatch sightings.
Yeah.
Which I find very interesting. And, you know, the La Llorona you talked about mm-hmm. before on the show, that's kind of like a woman in white story.
Well, there's so many of them across the U.S. Yeah. It's strange that there's as many of those as there are in like Bigfoot encounter, like Bigfoot stories. And that's, you know, like even the stuff we talked to Tim and Joshua about off air is it's the same thing as you're just like, man, that lady in white stuff is really cool.
Yeah. Very interesting. So thanks for sending that very story in.
Interesting. Folks, we are going to jump into an interview we have for y'all again today. Another one with our good buddy, Adam Stokes. Now, for those of you that don't know Adam's smart. He's one of those guys that's really, really smart. Like I said, he's got a BA in religion from Duke University, a Master's of Divinity from Yale Divinity School. I know he writes for Ancient American Magazine. He's also studied ancient American civilizations, Old Testament, Greco-Roman history, folklore. He's written books, multiple books. He's perspectives on the Old Testament and essentials in classical literature. He's written on that. This guy has dug into deep history. I know he speaks Latin, like he reads Latin. He reads multiple different like old languages. He's just one of those dudes. But besides the fact of knowing all that, he's a really great guy. And he has a lot of information on giants, which we all know Mr. Filson is a huge fan of giants as
yes,
well.
Yes, absolutely.
And so, and we're going to get him, we're going to have Adam come back on and discuss a lot more of the ancient history stuff that he's dug into, things that he has found. But on this little interview we're going to be doing, we're just going to get his take on the giants, some stories that he likes, some things that he ties into it, some really interesting stuff on the giants of ancient North America, if you will. So when we jump back from the break, we're going to dive into it with our buddy Adam Stokes. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. All right, everybody, here we go. As we alluded to the start of the show, we are getting to talk to someone who is an awesome dude, just first and foremost, but not just that. We're hoping to bring him in to be a very close friend because he has a fascination with giants, much like Mr. Filson here with me, and it is the all-powerful Adam Stokes. Adam, how are you doing, man?
I'm doing great, man. I'm just holding up in this quarantine. My family, we're all here. And basically just chilling and trying not to, you know, kill each other. I have a 3-year-old and a 6-year-old. So they've been running manic and we're trying to work and we're making it work. We're making it happen.
Oh, I bet you and your wife, I'm sure it's really difficult for young ones of that size to be stuck in the house. There's nothing you can really go do. And you just try to get buried up into work. That's what everybody seems to do. Everybody that's been stuck at home, let's just pass it by working and reading and just trying to go along. And that's what we're trying to do here with the podcast is try to give some folks that are stuck doing what they're doing now, a little entertainment. And that's why we got lucky to catch Adam and get a little bit of his time. Now, like I talked about in the intro, Adam is no stranger to books. He's no stranger to research and no stranger to education. And so I'm going to turn him loose with all these questions that we have. But I guess it's one of those, like we just talked off air, we were discussing about the giants and the skulls found here in Texas. And I was not made aware of the giants until we started this podcast back in 2013. I legitimately had no idea that it was even a thing. And then as we start researching strange tales, you start realizing, oh, wait, there may be actual physical evidence of this. And then as you start digging into it. So I just want to ask you real quick, what was the epiphany moment for you? And you're much smarter than I am, so it's probably happened to you when you were like 4 and didn't take it till you were like in your 30s like me to figure it out. But when did you have that moment like, oh, wait, because I know that you've done, like we discussed, a lot of with the divinity and a lot of the religious studies, and I know that there are tales of the giants, the Nephilim, these such a things in there. So was it during those studies that caught you first to direct you towards the giants, or did you have that fascination earlier and that's what led you to those studies?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I think right when I was studying like the Bible and stuff in divinity school, I was always drawn to the stories of, you know, monstrous creatures, Leviathan, Behemoth, the Witch of Endor, stuff like that. And what intrigued me about the giants is that, you know, with these other creatures, a lot of them are just mythological or they're metaphorical. But when you look at the stories of the giants in the Bible, they seem to be real people. And the people who are writing this stuff down seem to be talking about literal events, actual events that are taking place. And that just like blew my mind. So the Bible, it just basically made me spread out in my research and see, you know, what do these other cultures have to say about giants? What does Irish culture have to say about giants? What does German culture have to say about giants? And then through my own research, finding out that there was a whole giant tradition here in North America that there seems to be strong evidence for was connected to the old world. So I think it comes from my fascination basically with monsters in the Bible that began when I was in divinity school. And I like monsters in general. I watch a lot of horror movies. Mm-hmm. Alien with Ridley Scott's one of my all-time favorite movies. I just like that. And then, like I said, reading these stories about the giants and just, like you said, an epiphany moment. This is real. This is actual history. And a lot of the Bible isn't like that. Like I said, a lot of the Bible is metaphor and illusion. But this stuff seemed to actually be real, and just blew my mind. And I knew I had to, you know, delve into this rabbit hole even further.
Dude, I'm totally with you. I'm super stoked that you're here. I was the same way. Like I, when we started the show, I was very familiar with a lot of the paranormal stories, but when I uncovered the fact that there was, I knew about the mounds, you know, like the serpent mounds and the tales of Cahokia and places like that in ancient North America. But I didn't, at that time, I was not aware of in these mounds, they were finding giant skeletons. And then I was totally not aware that there was not just a couple, but thousands of stories depicted in newspapers at the time. And those are the ones that were only reported. There's countless others, farmers tilling their land, uncover some bones. They just disregard it and keep going. And I started getting into books by like Richard Dewhurst, Philip Coenard, Fritz Zimmerman.
All the greats. Yeah. Fritz is a great guy. And Richard, his book is kind of, for me, followed closely by Zimmerman's Encyclopedia, which is one of the books you should read before you die. But Richard Dewhurst's book was really the one that got me into it. And that's kind of like my giant Bible, I like to say. So there's the Old Testament, and then there's Richard Dewhurst. And for me, that's like my giant Bible. And I also draw on Fritz Zimmerman's stuff that he's done. And he is always posting articles on Facebook and stuff about amazing stuff that he's still finding. Yeah, but like you said, there's like thousands of articles on these giants, and people will, you know, dismiss a lot of these as hoaxes. But I mean, even if you took like 10% of these articles and said that they were, you know, this is the real deal, that's amazing, Cam. That's phenomenal.
I agree. I mean, like you're saying, I know that they're sure, just like tabloids. I mean, sure, sometimes reporters embellish the truth to make a good story, but there's too many of them from them all to be made up. And there's,
yeah,
you know, there's actual photographs, there's scientific journals at the Smithsonian, things talking about these. And I know you wrote a book, From Egypt to Ohio. And in that book, you're talking not just about these giants, that they were real, but I wanted to ask you, where did they originate and why do you think they eventually migrated to North America?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. So I think that the giants in North America originally came from the old world, the ancient Near East. And there's a lot of aspects of, I think, general Native American culture, but also the culture of the mound builders in particular that point to it. Their temples, their mounds being structured in the same shape as pyramids, the layout of their temples being the same as the Shiloh temple tradition in the Old Testament, and the various Hebrew inscriptions, Semitic inscriptions that we get, not just in Ohio, but throughout the United States. I'm thinking of the Los Lunas Decalogue stone in New Mexico as well. So I think all of those point to a specific link to the old world and the ancient Near East. And I think that they came over here. I think that, first off, I think that there were several migrations, Cam, over a couple of thousands of years into various parts of North America. That's why you have Hebrew inscriptions in Ohio, and you also have Hebrew inscriptions in New Mexico. But I think the main impetus for their migration was the destruction of the Jerusalem temple in 586 BCE, where the Babylonians came in and just started hacking up everybody. Unless you were a woman or a small child, you were dead. So you, Kyle, me, we'd all be dead. So you have to get the heck out of Jerusalem and find some place to go. And you can't just go, you can't just go over to Egypt or to Assyria or someplace else, because the Babylonian Empire controls everything. So you need to get far, far, far away as you can. It's like Harrison Ford's The Fugitive. You know, he had to get as far away as possible from where they thought he was. So I think that event was the main event that led them over here. And they basically continued their Semitic culture here. And that's evidenced for in the mounds and in the inscriptions that you find at the mounds and other cultural artifacts.
Yeah. I mean, this is Kyle. Could you go more in depth and let the listeners know what the Los Lunas Decalogue stone that's in New Mexico? Could you explain kind of what that is to the people that may not know?
Yes. Yeah, so the Los Lunas Decalogue stone. So the Decalogue is another word, fancy academic term for the Ten Commandments. So this is a stone that contains the Ten Commandments in the Bible, which according to the biblical authors was given to Moses on Mount Sinai and basically becomes the basis for the Torah or the Pentateuch, which Jews still follow in Judaism today. Now, for a long time, this tends to be the tendency within mainstream academia. This was dismissed as a hoax. But the big problem here is that this stone is the Hebrew that it's written in is Paleo Hebrew. And that would have been a type of script that could date no earlier than 538 BCE.
Yeah.
Furthermore, when the Los Lunas stone was found, which I believe in the 19th century, we didn't have knowledge of Paleo Hebrew and Proto-Semitic the same way that we do now in the 20th and 21st century. So some random dude trying to make this up, you know, he'd have to be really, 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 really good, like basically the best biblical scholar of his day to actually forge this thing. So the fact that it's in a very early language suggests that it is the real deal. And Scott Walter, whose work that I absolutely love, I've mentioned him a lot. He's actually done geological work with this, in dating the stone and basically showing that, you know, this isn't just something that somebody erected 50 years ago. This has been here, whatever it is, it's been here for a really long darn time.
Right, right. Yeah, we've actually had Scott on the show before, and I believe.
Oh, great.
Yeah, and I believe we had similar things with like the Kensington Rune Stone. This is and other runes that have been found where people are like, "Yeah, it's probably hoaxed," but you're like, "No, you don't understand. You'd have to have a really detailed knowledge of the language to fake that." And how many people in rural New Mexico, you know, have that skill at that time? Yeah. And so this is just further proof that these giants from persecution ran from the Near East, you call it, the Middle East area, and from persecution fled to North America and set up shop here. And there's all of these mounds, some still here, but it shows that that culture, not only were they large in stature, but they were very advanced. Like a lot of the things they built were with cosmology. They would erect things in certain that would, you know, align on summer solstices, winter solstices, and things like that. So tell us more about the giants after they've left the Near East and they migrated to North America and they started, I don't even know, maybe building a civilization.
Yes. Yeah. So basically they retained, like every like immigrant groups do, you know, the story of the Italians, the Irish, the Germans, they basically retain, they're in a new place, but they basically retain a lot of their culture from, the old world. And so, the knowledge that, they have, and I talk a little bit about this in my book. So, I argue for kind of an Egyptian Israelite, merger that whoever the giants were, their ethnic background was a mix of Egyptian and Israelite, which is not surprising because in the biblical text, there's a lot of intermixing with Egypt and Israel. I know that in pop culture, Egypt is often seen as the arch enemy, the Joker to the Israelite people because of like the Ten Commandments and stuff like that. But they were actually, if you look outside the book of Exodus, Egypt and Israel were pretty close. They were BFFs. And in fact, one of the reasons that that the giants had to flee was because the Israelites had an alliance with Egypt. They thought Egypt would help them out against the Babylonians. Egypt chickens out. And so they have to run away because they're getting their butts kicked by the Babylonians. But they take the knowledge that they have from both Israelite culture with its basically its foundation in biblical law and Mosaic law and Hebrew, and their architectural knowledge from the Egyptians with the pyramids, and kind of build this fusion society. And that's why the mounds are very similar. Like you mentioned, the dimensions are very similar to the Egyptian pyramids. And this is why you have the giants, basically, from what we can tell, their culture and their religion was very, very similar. In fact, the fact that they were buried instead of cremated, as you get in other Native American cultures, shows that, you know, they're kind of coming from this Near Eastern background. So there's a lot of stuff that they bring into North America. And specifically talking about the technology of the giants, they were very, very skilled in warfare. So we have, especially in Ohio, and Wayne May has done a lot of work on this, Rick Osmond, that there are these fortresses, these amazing fortresses that go back about 2,000 years and stuff that the giants built. And there are these amazing fortifications. And you look at them and you think, oh gosh, somebody must have, this must have been erected in the during the time of the Civil War or something. It's that detailed, but it actually goes thousands of years back. So they brought that kind of technological skill, especially in regards to warfare, to the New World.
I forgot. That's what me and Kyle, the minute you brought up Rick's name, me and we're like, oh, I forgot we talked to Rick also. Like that had totally skipped my mind.
Great.
Yeah, he's great. I'm going to have to ask you this before Kyle keeps stealing it all, because I know he's fixing to take it and run with it. So I want to ask you this. Do you think that there were Native Americans in North America whenever the Giants arrived. And the reason I ask is because we have a lot of stories from the Native Americans passed along, like the stories of the Giants, some Lovelock Cave in Nevada. We get stories from up in Ohio. We get things of all these giants that they used to run in. They were red-haired giants and black-haired giants.
Spanish explorers.
Exactly. And so I just wonder, and there's also another reason, an underlying reason, as I ask this, is to bring this up. I myself am only 5'8", and I remember looking into this thing a while back, is that there were a handful of tribes, Native American tribes, that are still considered. There was an article at one point published in Scientific American that talked about how there was a handful of Native American tribes at the time were the tallest people on Earth, and that they averaged 5'8". And so, and that's crazy. And then, because, I mean, we think of it now, of course, there's, you know, much taller, but you have to think, you know, as far as like nutrition, you think about genetics as things go through, it has a lot to do with it. But I find it.
And remember.
What's that?
And like you said, you know, average of 5'8", that's enormous. Most humans average like 5'4", and that's talking about, you know, the tallest people, your NBA players and your short person. I'm only 5'4". I'm short, but. I mean, for 5'8" being the average, we're talking about some really big people here.
Yeah, it could have easily hit 6-footers. And I cannot remember the name of the Native American fella that fought against Custer. And I always forget his name. And they actually put him in the Wild Bill's show, and they brought him around. And they said that he was like over 6 foot at the time and was monstrous. So I look at that, and I always think about, the reason I always drawn is because I'm drawn to Comanche, the Native American group of the Comanches, because one of their last big chiefs, Quanah Parker, was, that's kind of the way this county got its name that we live here in Texas, is Parker County. So there was a lot of Comanche stories and things that go on here. But what I find so fascinating is I picture a lot of interbreeding. I picture a lot of intermingling, and maybe that's what led to it, or even the watering down of it. So that's the reason that I wanted to ask, and in a roundabout way to come back to that, before Kyle stole it, was to find out if there was something that you had found that led you to believe that the Giants, maybe they were here when the Native Americans got here. I guess maybe they met here in North America, or were they already here, do we believe? Because you don't, because I don't know if there's a lot of giant encounters or history that comes from South America as much as it is in North America.
Yeah, I would definitely say there's much more North America than South America. Not that it isn't there in places like Peru and stuff, because a lot of independent museums have these these bones from these giant persons. But I think it's a much bigger phenomenon in North America. And it's interesting because I think here you kind of have the intersection of what, to use highfalutin academic language, the Clovis theory with the migration of the giants. So I think that the giants were already here to some extent when Native Americans were populating the continent. And we have stories over and over again from the oral traditions of the Native Americans that they'd be traveling, their tribe settled here, but there were already giants here. The giants weren't happy that the Native Americans were settling there. And so you would have these fights and these battles that would take place. Now, also with that said, I think that you hit the nail on extremely hard on the head, that I think that there's interbreeding going on between these giants and the Native Americans. And that's what counts for in later centuries, some Native American tribes being extremely tall. Greg Little talks about this in his book with Andrew Collins on Denisovan Origins. And he says that he mentions one example of a European settler coming in. And they have basically this big shootout with this tribe of giants, at least 7 feet tall. The dude who basically got in the battle with the Native Americans, the European settler, he draws a picture of what's happening, kind of what they did back in the Civil War when they would draw pictures of the battle. Mm-hmm. And he depicts the giants as super tall. And it's funny, when this gets recorded, so they take this manuscript that he has, he tells the whole story of the battle. He has the picture of the 7 foot tall Indians. And when he takes it to the Smithsonian, there's literally a dude with an eraser who erases the giant, who erases the giants and redraws the Native Americans as shorter than they were. So
redacted.
You have yes. So he makes them like normal size, but everybody, the Native American tribe themselves, and the European settlers say, you know, these were really, really tall people. So I think that Native Americans inherited not only the genetics of the giant, and that explains why some Native American tribes have very tall people in them. But I think they also inherited, to some extent, the culture of the giant as well, because there are a lot of features. And there was a Jewish rabbi in the 19th century talked about this. A lot of features of Native American culture parallel what you get in Semitic culture. And the Black Irish Cherokee, whom Rick Osmond knows really, really well, they actually make the claim, I think legitimately, in my opinion, that they are one of the 12 tribes of Israel. So go figure.
Yeah. Well, and it makes sense, too, to redact those pictures at that time, the drawings, because during that time, we couldn't show that the Native Americans were equal or greater than us whenever we were here.
How would that look if you're if they're towering over you? Yeah.
Well, and it's way easier to take things away from people that you don't think are your equals. It's so much easier to treat people terrible if you don't look at them as people. And I'm sure that that's what a lot of it had to do. That is so fascinating, though, of like what you were talking about with Rick.
Yeah, I remember he spoke about the Mandans and how their language or their dialect was Welsh in origin.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And they had blue eyes.
Yes.
Why? I don't understand, and I'm hoping maybe you can shed some light on it in your research, Adam, is why does it seem to be still to this day actively dismissed?
I think it goes exactly back to what you guys just said. I think that there is still permeating this view of the Native American and pre-Columbian North America as extremely primitive and barbarous, when it absolutely was not. But that was the narrative that you got, especially in the 19th century, when you have Manifest Destiny. Mm-hmm. Dewhurst points this out. When you have Manifest Destiny going on, and you need to find a way, like you said, to belittle the Native American and say that they have no culture. So these mounds and these giants represent a direct threat to that. So you downplay that as much as you can, and hell, you even destroy as many mounds as you can to make sure that this information isn't found. And I think even though we're in the 21st century, and there's some pushback on that, I think that has become so ingrained in the way that we learn about early America, and it's just so hard to get out of that bubble. Like, I know when I was growing up, we even celebrated Native American, you know, holidays and festivals, and I had no clue about any of this stuff. I thought just Native Americans went around, you know, hunting for berries and, you know, walking through the grass and stuff like that, and I had no knowledge of this stuff, and that's because of the education that I had. So it's kind of sad, because I think until there's really a huge push and a shift in the way that we view pre-Columbian America, we're still working from that, you know, outdated kind of bigoted paradigm towards Native Americans.
Yeah, I'm sure with the writing of your book and things, you got to receive some pushback from colleagues and stuff, right?
Oh yes, all the time. They're like, there's no evidence for this, you know, it's all a hoax. I'm like, have you guys read the book? Have you read the book at all? So
And this
the same thing happened to Jim Vieira, who documented you know, his giants really, really well. You mentioned giants, and they just come after you. But, you know, that's why, you know, I'm an adjunct professor, but I don't really have, you know, tenure ties to anything. So that frees me up to, you know, research whatever the heck I want to.
Right.
And in my opinion, to, you know, get to the truth about things.
Man, and I'm so glad that you do that, because I felt when I finally discovered this and didn't just find one book, but many sources, multiple sources over the years, I felt mad. Like, I was let down by my adults, my professors, my teachers, because I was never told this. And when I would tell other people, they look at me like I'm crazy. And I'm like, no, I'm telling you. It's there. This is something. I mean, this is where we live. It, to me, don't you think it's important that people should know about the history? It's very frustrating.
Yeah. And you go to, I took a few years ago, before we had our second kid, this is way back. Our first kid, Grayson, was only like a year old or something. We went down to Jamestown, and they have a whole super huge Native American like section for Native American history and stuff like that. And I didn't hear any of this information. Not a single peep.
Well, and yeah, like what Kyle's saying is, I feel the same way. Is I wasn't even aware of Cahokia and actually what that was, because I was, like you're talking about, the only Native American stuff that I was ever introduced as a young man, as a child,
is they were savages.
Well, but it was history of Comanche or history of the Apache. Well, the Comanche was a full, basically traveler, gypsy movement. They just moved. They just roamed. But, and I never thought, I thought, well, every other Native American tribe was the exact same way. And then the older you get and the more you research, you're like, no, they were tribes that had massive cities, huge. Mm-hmm. And you're like, well, where did this come from? Like, how did, you know, where did the idea of this come from? How did this develop? What was it? And then it starts making you, the snowball begins and it starts compounding of what was hidden? And what was destroyed, and what did we not want anybody to, you know, what did we not want to fit in the box of normalcy that we made sure to cover up, to get away, or to discredit anything and anyone that was involved with it at that time. And it almost, I know this is a very dramatic thing to say, but it's almost like our own personal burning of the Library of Alexandria for all of the information and all of the knowledge and all of the history that was lost through those few hundred years around that time. Because imagine if we would have embraced it. Because to me, there's enough information. It's what I'd even brought up to you off air that I want to get into now, is this whole thing is it took place here in Texas in a newspaper called the San Antonio Express in Victoria, Texas. There are three skulls, and they are enormous. When I'm saying three skulls,
there are pictures of them.
Yes, there's photographs of them. And one of them is big as a bag of dog food. Like, it is a human skull the size of a 50-pound sack of food. I mean, why would you, first of all, just to see something like that, you would think it was fake. The minute you walk in, you're like, well, that's not real. But when you find out it's real, you're like, hold on. And this was back in 1940. We're not talking 1840. Yeah. We're talking 1940.
With the Works Progress Administration. Yeah.
Yes. Yep. So, I mean, it's just one of those things. I guess you've dealt with this kind of frustration to see it and to trace it and to track it down. Now, I know that you've covered from all across the world and all those things, but does it seem like they all made their way? I say all. I know there were pockets, but it does seem like the largest concentration of giants is in North America, correct?
And particularly the like Ohio Valley.
Well, because it's beautiful up there.
Exactly. So North America and the Ohio Valley, which is which is the area where the Hopewell and Adena live. So that was, for me, I would argue, and other scholars will argue this as well. I'm pretty sure Wayne May would argue this, and Fritz Zimmer would argue this. That was the center of their empire, an empire that reached all the way into New York and what is now West Virginia. So this thing was huge. And like you said, there were, you know, these vast cities that Native Americans lived in, and nobody, you know, ever says anything about this. Another book that you should read before you die is Charles Mann's 1491. He talks about this phenomenon. He says, basically, the myth that you get of the Native American wandering from place to place in tents is the post-smallpox era of North American history, when smallpox basically wiped out a whole load of thousands, even millions of Native Americans. And that is why you have the wandering. But before that time, there were cities, huge cities, some cities the size of London and New York, that were all throughout North America.
Golly. And knowing, I can't imagine. Well, knowing now what we've uncovered in South America with the LIDAR scans, and we're seeing all the old roads, you have to imagine it was here. The problem is that it was easily found, so it was easily destroyed, to whereas Mother Nature covered it in South America and hid this from everything.
Thankfully, one of the saddest things is there is the menorah mound in Ohio, which Ed Squire, who was one of the first geographers to explore the region, he actually made a sketch of it, and it was destroyed. So for years, you mentioned the manure mound, and they were like, no, this is just from his imagination. He just made this up. There was no such thing as a manure mound, because you can see kind of the connection between the old world and the new world with that manure mound. Comes to find out, this was only a couple of years ago, Cam and Kyle, that the Smithsonian had a sketch of the manure mound as well and verified it as once existing. But it was deliberately destroyed, just like the many other mounds there. So like you said, because they were out in the open and you could see them, you know, that made them easier to destroy.
Wow.
And the fact that, like we've discussed, it's way easier to, if you control history, you control the future. So you can change it to whatever you want and be like, well, that didn't exist, because you realize of all the things that you've done.
Yeah. I mean,
but it's sad, like you said. I mean, you know, you mentioned the Library of Alexandria, and that always kind of breaks my heart.
Mm-hmm.
History geek that I am. I watched the movie Cleopatra, and whenever they burn down that library, my eyes start to water.
Worst part of the film.
Like you said, worst part of the film. Definitely worst part of the film. More than killing Caesar. I could see them killing Caesar.
Oh, yeah, I mean, of
burn
course.
Burn down a library.
But leave the library alone.
Yes, leave the library alone. Don't touch that. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, people, we get lots of pushback whenever we do episodes on people being here long before Columbus, like the Egyptians. And I know that the copper that was, well, speaking of copper, before I get on that, there's been giants found with like copper jewelry, copper bracelets,
copper helmets. Yes.
Copper helmets. So they knew about metallurgy. And then, you know, we found out along the line that there was a giant copper mine in Lake Michigan, Isle Royale. Mm-hmm. They know at least 6,000 years old. They were mining massive amounts of copper, which they were they found all the way in Egypt. I believe the Egyptians either were traveling up the Mississippi themselves, or they are subcontracted out the Phoenicians. You see all of this.
Clear evidence of interchange, trading and interchange between the old world and the new. And people, when you mention that, people say, oh, that's fantastic. There's no way in those teeny boats that they could get through it. Scott Walter, he also did, I keep mentioning his name. He also did a show on this. And Stephen Smoot has written on this as well, that there was they recreated a Phoenician ship back in 2010 and decided to try and take it around the world. And it actually ended up, the breezes that they took, they went through around Africa, all around Africa, and the wind blew the ship to about 40 miles off the coast of Florida. So this was a perfectly possible trip to make. And they weren't starving. They weren't dying. They set up with the exact amount of food that the Phoenicians would have on the ship. Nobody died. I mean, they got a little seasick because it's an old rickety wooden ship. But this is my point, is that this is something that was completely possible to be done. And as you said, we have evidence that this was being done. The trade was going back and forth and back and forth centuries before Columbus's time. And I mean, why wouldn't you want to know about this stuff? I think it just makes, I'm a big American history buff. I love the Revolutionary War. I love the Civil War. I actually have some ancestors who actually fought on the British side in the Revolutionary War. Which is really interesting. Yep, I had a dude was a redcoat. I love American history, and wouldn't this be such a great contribution to just the richness of American history, you know, as it is? I think, like you said, it is basically burning down the Library of Alexandria.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there's Egyptian hieroglyphs with corn in it. Well, corn is not native to Egypt; it's North and South American. There's traces
of South America. Yep,
traces of cocaine. And use of cocaine being used by the pharaohs.
And the marijuana plant.
So,
which is indigenous to North America. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And not just the Egyptians. There's Chinese all along the west coast of the United States and Japanese. There's rare blood lines that are very similar to the. I mean, what I'm getting at is I think growing up, I don't know if it was like that in Maryland where you grew up, but not only were the Native Americans made to seem simple
and stupid. But we were taught, like everybody, like we always assume that we're the greatest and best human beings have ever been now. And I think it was far different. Yeah. We always think of them as they're way too dumb. There's no way they could have sailed. There's no way they could have figured out navigation to get all the way up the Mississippi. Yeah. When all that's untrue. I mean,
that's completely untrue. Yeah.
Not only were they knew how to mine copper, how the hell did somebody figure out that it was all there?
Yeah. Where? How did they find it?
I couldn't tell you how to find copper now.
Yes. And we drove through giant copper mines.
No. Neither could I. That's an excellent point, because like you said, so often we think that the ancient world was just, you know, was just dumb and very primitive, when I would say that in a lot of cases, not just North American civilization, but the Maya and the Mayan and the Aztecs and, you know, the Romans, these were civilizations that when you look at what they did, I mean, the Romans had a freaking computer, for heaven's sake. Mm-hmm. They were more advanced in a lot of ways, I think, than we are today. So we are not the pinnacle. And one of the things that I find humbling and, you know, extremely enriching at the same time is to look at ancient history and to realize, as I think, you know, people like Graham Hancock and others have shown, we are not the pinnacle of civilization. There were a lot of people, there are a lot of groups doing amazing things, you know, way before we came on the scene.
We're a big letdown most of the time, I think.
Yes.
Well, and so much of our information now is being stored digitally or in a cloud. And, you know, we'll run giant volcano or asteroid or solar outbreak, and we're going to be back in the Stone Age.
Exactly. All that stuff's going to be erased. So, and they knew how to store stuff back then. I mean, you look at the biblical manuscripts, you know, they knew how to store them in these caves where nothing happened. You know, and they were able to preserve their culture. What's going to happen to us? Like you said, we have a store in the cloud, you know, just like a memory wipe or something, you know, something happens with that or a natural disaster, we're done.
Adam, I want to ask you real quick before we let you go and let you get back to your family is there some other research that you have found to show that maybe were these giants a more dominant culture pre-diluvian, I guess is what I'm wondering, was it pre-flood? Because we know of all the flood, we know of these things. It seems like their culture was old enough. Like that's the only place I guess I could think of it coming down from would be pre-diluvian times. Was there anything that you had found that might show that?
Yeah. I think you hit the nail on the head. I think there's a definite connection between these giants, not only with the old world, with the Near East, but to pre-diluvian times. And we see that with the term Nephilim. Mm-hmm. So in Genesis 6 in the Bible, which takes place right before the flood, you have the Nephilim, which are translated in Greek and Latin as gigantes or giants. And then you have the flood come. And then thousands of years later, in Moses' time, the Israelites run into these giants whom they call the sons of the Nephilim and the Anakim, which is weird, because they should have all died out in the flood, but here they are existing. So I think that the giants that Israel will eventually kind of interbreed with, and you get this Egyptian-Israelite hybrid, I think that actually goes way back to a pre-diluvian giant culture that we can't explicitly identify their source of origin. If I was a betting man, I'd say Atlantis or something like that. But yes, I think they go back to that era. And like you said, they were kind of a dominant society. And one of the reasons a lot of people speculate about this, I think one of the reasons that the flood happened was because they were an oppressive society, dominating people. The Hebrew text suggests that they were, you know, taking regular human women by force and having sex with them. So they were just not the nicest of people. And this parallels, ironically, what you get in Native American traditions where they say, you know, we encounter these giants, they weren't really nice. On the West Coast, you have the Paracas skulls from a cannibalistic group of giants that were eating Native Americans. And the Native Americans got sick of this, rose up in revolt, and basically killed them all off. So same type of this domineering oppressive tendency that you get with the Nephilim.
And they couldn't have died during the flood. They could touch. It didn't get over their head.
Yeah, well,
they can stand on the ground.
They survived somehow.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
It wasn't deep enough. It only flooded to like 9 feet, and they were all 10 footers. They were just standing around. That's it?
They were able to stick their nose up. Yeah,
that's right.
Breathe through their nose. Yeah,
that's right. Adam, we appreciate you coming on and sharing all this so much. We're going to have to, we've got so many other things we want to talk to you about. We're going to let you get back to it. Tell everybody where they can find your books, where they can find your work, all the stuff where they can find all your writings, things like that, please.
Absolutely. So I contribute pretty regularly to Ancient American Magazine, published by my good friend Wayne May. So I'm always writing about giants and just ancient American culture in there. I have my book From Egypt to Ohio that you mentioned. That can be found on Amazon and Books A Million. The Kindle is pretty cheap. It's about $5. And the paperback is $10. So a pretty cheap book. I also have an Instagram account, Adam the Giant Guy. And I'm always posting whatever, like you mentioned, articles and stuff, whatever articles and newspaper clippings and pictures I can find about giants and about ancient North America on that site. And I also have a Facebook page. I have two Facebook pages. One's kind of my personal one. So there's a lot of family stuff, but I also put stuff about giants on there. And then I have a tutoring website because my main job is teaching Latin and languages. So I have a tutoring website that you can follow. And I put some of my writings on there just to show people that, you know, I'm qualified to teach. So a lot of my giant stuff is on there as well.
Nice.
Man, awesome.
Yeah, yeah. With all the Latin, all the stuff, all the languages. Look, it's just too much.
We'll have to have you on again.
Oh, for sure. We're going to have to come on and do this again.
That would be
awesome. Adam, thank you so much for spending your evening with us. Thank you so much for sharing all this information. And we are for sure going to have you back on.
It was my absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Woo-hoo-hoo. And here we go again. What did you think? I hoped everybody enjoyed it. Adam's one of those guys. We always say we're going to do this, folks. We always say, hey, we're just going to get whoever we're going to interview on. We're going to have them on. We're going to talk to them just a little bit. We don't want to keep them all day or, you know, more than we
want.
But it never works out that way. We always talk way before the thing starts. Then it's after it starts. We keep chatting again like it never it never just goes the way we say we're going to go. We turn off everything, stop recording, and then it just continues to keep rolling.
I mean, there's just people like Adam. There's such a wealth of knowledge that, you know, we really could talk for 3 or 4 hours. And I know that there's people that say, well, why don't you do a longer show? Like, why don't you do a 3-hour show? For me, I have ADD really bad. And so, like, if it starts going longer than an hour, I have trouble concentrating. I know if you don't believe me, you know, it's hard to concentrate. But yes, no, we're going to definitely have him on again. I really love the stories of the giants, as anybody that's been listening to the show for any length of time knows. And because it's for the very reason that there is physical proof, right? There are bones that you could find. There are bones that are documented in a courthouse, not even that far from here, Somerville County. The city's courthouse is in Glen Rose. Just until recently, if you went into the courthouse there, they had a set of bones from a Native American that were of giant proportions.
Yes.
Now, and I'm not talking a 20 footer or nothing crazy like that, but I believe it was like 8.5.
Yeah.
And it was a female, I believe. So that's very tall for this area and for people from this native to this country. And when you go back and start looking, see, when I first got into this, as I brought up, and I've brought up many times, like people would mention it to me and I was like, what are they talking about? And then I started looking into it, and there is a wealth of knowledge. If you want to get into this, you could just go to Amazon and start looking at books. Like Patrick Cohenard got a book on it. Richard Dewhurst, Fritz Zimmerman, I think is probably the best. I've even done episodes recently from Fritz's book on the little people, but also giants. Jim Vieira, if you remember the History Channel show that was out a couple years ago with Jim and his brother. Hugh Newman, he writes about it. He's got books on the subject matter. It's just crazy to me that there is this culture here in North America with the mounds and the giants and the copper mining. And like all of that is never taught in school.
And if you look at things like, you know, like even the Old Testament in the Bible, it talks about the Nephilim and how, you know, they were chased. And I believe they fled to North America, where they were eventually killed by the Native Americans. You know, we have Lovelock Cave, the stories of the giants with red beards. Yep. And I mean, it's just, to me, it's one of those stories that's what makes it so interesting, is you hear the crazy stories, but yet there is physical proof where, you know, when it comes to Sasquatch or many of these other topics like extraterrestrials and stuff, I mean, I want to believe and I'm very intrigued by it, but there's not a lot of physical remains, if any, you know, that are talked about. Some people talk about that they found stuff, but this is something that there is physical proof, and like most people don't even know what you're talking about. If you went up to, you know, when you get together for a next family gathering, if you start talking to people, they'll be like, what in the hell are you talking about?
Yes.
They're going to think you're making stuff up again. What are you drinking? Is that iced tea or what do you got in there? And you're like, no, man, it's real. It's very real, documented, thousands of
cases. And it's actively covered up.
It is.
Actively covered.
I mean, I've read several books on the subject, and it's always the same thing. That I can't think of his name right now. His name escapes me. But there was a guy who was the head of the Smithsonian back in the day. And
I've heard these stories.
He was a Christian, and he was trying to push that agenda. And I think he was in charge of kind of just like paying people, whoever found bones and delivered it, he would pay them and then he would have them removed. But like we talked about so many other times, how many of these farmers are plowing their field? They find the bones. They live 70 miles on horseback from the nearby town. Do they even take the time of day to do it?
Not even care. That. Like even now, like if you were, certain farmers have a big area, they know right now the red tape that it would cause if they uncover a skeleton and they see that and they're like, look, if this is a Native American skeleton and that's what this is, I'm fixing to lose all of my land for quite some time and I'm trying to farm on it because they're going to shut it down. Like, let's just cover it back up and keep cruising.
Cover
like,
it up and keep cruising.
Move it, throw it in another ditch. I don't care, but we have got to keep at the bottom line. What is it? Money. Money's at the bottom of every line. Money. What's it worth?
At least some agenda. Yes. Always behind it. I mean, we've talked about it on the show. My uncle, who was in construction years ago, in the city of Fort Worth, said that they were digging stuff up with like an excavator, bulldozer, and they found some giant dinosaur bones. And, you know, the guy that was operating the machinery stopped and went and told the boss man, and the boss man knew the same thing. Like, it's going to cause a lot of problems. So what did he do? He said, get out of the way. He took a bobcat, smashed the bones up into pieces.
Yep.
Said, get back to work. Yeah, and if that happened for somebody that I know, how many times do you think that's happened in history?
Mm-hmm.
Thousands upon thousands.
Yeah.
Especially long ago.
Well, just like the story I was telling you and Adam off air, the guy that I'd met whenever I was like 19, when we were building that house, same exact thing. I'll tell everybody right now. I was I was in construction. We built houses. I was a framer and carpenter. And so right out of high school, I had done it. I'd done it some in high school too, but right out of high school, that's what I'd started doing. And we were building a kind of like a guest house and all this stuff for a fella one time south of here. And we went into his home. And he had all kinds of artifacts, like in display cases, like his living room area or his den area was huge. And it was plumb full of all these artifacts, like giant spearheads and hatchet heads and pottery and all this stuff. And we had asked him where he came up with all this. And he worked for, or actually had owned a company where they had done right-of-way working in South America, North and South America. So they cleared right-of-way for oil and gas lines. And they were working in South America somewhere, and I don't remember because it's been years and years. And he said they would come across mounds out in the middle of the jungles. And he said if those mounds were in the way, you had to take them down to lay it for that right-of-way. And he said you would open them up, like peel the tops off, and basically you're desecrating these mounds. But they would tear into the steps, and there was all kinds of stuff, all kinds of ancient artifacts found in those mounds. And he said, I would take some and ship them back home and give them to the guys that worked for us and all that. He goes, it wasn't until later we found out that that we would go to prison for it. Wow. And he said that after I guess some of these antiquity laws were set, or maybe even they just decided we better start following the laws, is he would tell stories about they would find them and have to call people in. And he said it would shut the job down for weeks, 2 or 3 weeks, as they would excavate, and then you'd have to work around it, and they would have something to where they would have to come in and move everything off of there. Like, we're going through here. We're just going to let y'all get everything, all these artifacts out, but we're still going through here. So they don't even know what might have been around the mound. You just pretty much empty the mound out and then bulldoze it down and keep going. So there's no telling what is either still down there or has been looted like you've spoken of and never talked about.
Right.
They're just putting somebody's home and that's it.
They know that these things were burial mounds, a lot of them, and, you know, people would just loot them. Yeah. I believe that happened.
Yeah.
And some people weren't even doing it to gain money. Like, they're literally just trying to grow crops. And this stuff is in their way.
Yeah.
You know, you got to remember, back then when people, these are some rough people that were settling this country, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, not only did you have to do all the manual labor, you couldn't call up Amazon to have stuff delivered. You'd have to go to town like once a year, stock up. Then you had to battle natives.
Exactly. You know?
I mean, it was just a really rough life. So here's another thing. And that culture, I mean, I'm not saying it's right, but you have to remember like the Anglo-Saxon white folk that were settling the country. Mm-hmm. They didn't really care for the Native Americans, not at all. And so you're telling me if they found a burial mound of what they perceived were natives, that they'd even care?
No, of course not.
You know what I'm saying? There was no respect.
They would tear down nowadays, and burn down everything.
I mean, there's racism now. Imagine what it was then.
Yeah.
I mean, they were Native Americans then were seen as substandard.
Yes.
You know, unfortunately. But that's just the mindset of dumb people. So I could totally see where, if they came across something like that, they wouldn't be like, oh, my God.
They just destroyed.
I can't believe I disturbed someone's loved one's grave. You know, they're not. They just moved on.
Yeah,
it's in my exactly. way. Very, very cool. I loved this interview. I had a great time talking to Adam. I love talking to people with knowledge like that, especially about things that I'm interested in.
Yes.
So,
and like I said, we're going to get him back on to talk about more stuff, ancient North American stuff. And I mean, he's got a lot of stuff that he's researched and tied to it. So it's really interesting.
I got another listener story, if you got a second.
Throw it on us.
Check this out. This comes from our buddy Chris, north of the border, our friend from up there in Canada. It says, it must have been somewhere in the neighborhood of 1990 to 1992, because I was driving with my late mother in her old brown Ford Mustang, a vehicle which was subsequently totaled in an accident in 1994. Everyone was okay from that crash, but not how my mother ended up passing away, but I digress. At the time of this sighting, I was around 10 or 11 years old. We were just taking the 5 or so minute drive from the local mall to our townhouse in Burnaby, British Columbia, which is in Canada, home of the great Joe Sakic. To my hockey fan brother Kyle out there. Yeah, I like Joe. Man, I remember when he was on the Nordiques. Very cool. It says, very quaint, tree-lined, sided streets, a small community library, a sprawling three-story low-rise buildings, and a few high-rises more adjacent to the mall itself. It was dark, but not too late. Must have been before 8 p.m., which would have placed this sighting in late autumn, I believe. But we were just heading home, likely had some takeout food and VHS rentals, as we were inclined to enjoy back in those days, and turning right onto a curving road that sort of swoops down to the townhouse complexes on the foothills of Burnaby Mountain or Simon Fraser University. There it was, this black triangle, Cam.
Yes.
Now, even back in those days, my mom and I knew what a stealth bomber was, and that's what we originally thought it was. Only one problem, though. It was hovering in place. That's right. Just hanging in the sky.
Yeah, that's a problem.
Very low. Not much higher than the tops of the Lougheed Tower high-rises. Upon reflection, I feel that this black triangle was made more of a sharper, acute angle than the stealth bomber, which is much more of a wide, obtuse angle. But we assumed at the time that it was a stealth bomber and that the American military were running some sort of secret technology tests in our airspace. We're just a 20 or so minute drive from the Washington state border. I pointed it out to my mom, and she saw it right away, and we were staring at it and slowly rolling down the swooping curved road. My mom couldn't get over it and actually pulled over. We both got out and just watched it. Another driver behind us pulled over and also got out to have a look. I can't remember what we said or the guy said, but probably along the lines of, "Isn't that strange?" and the mention of the stealth bomber. Anyways, my mom passed away in November of 2018, and even in her last years, we both remembered and discussed the sighting. I just thought I'd submit it to you guys and the EP audience because I have recently heard you guys mention the Black Triangle UFOs, while listening to an old episode on YouTube. It was after that quick reference that my sighting came flooding to my mind, specifically the fact that this black triangle craft was a much narrower angle than the stealth bomber. Maybe it was just some U.S. military craft, who knows, but it happened exactly as described. Take care, peace, and love from Canada, Chris. Yeah, Chris, man, I agree with your sighting. I appreciate your sighting. I'm sorry, not agree with it. Of course, I agree with it. I totally believe that you saw what you did, you and your mother. We've had numerous sightings sent to us over the years. And that is one of the long-running jokes, right? It's like there's different shapes, and it seems like for whatever reason, starting in the late 80s, early 90s, it seems to be triangular-shaped craft, where previous to that, it was like egg-shaped. Remember in the 60s?
Yep.
It's more like egg-shaped or more cigar-shaped or disc-shaped. With Kenneth Arnold's original sighting in Washington, by the way, not too far from where this took place.
It's funny how they change. It is funny.
So do you think this is one of, like, here we go again. It's one of the things. Are they changing because these are different secret aircraft that we or other countries are working on, much like the shapes of our aircraft in the military are much different? You know, like a P-51 Mustang is completely different than an F-16. An F-16 is completely different than an F-14.
I'll have to take your word for that.
They're just different. So is that what's happening? Or are these different craft all from the same alien race that are used for different things? Much like we have, you know, cargo planes like C-5 Galaxies, and then you have fighter jets. Then you also have like Cessnas, you know what I mean? Like different uses.
Mm-hmm.
Or are they different crafts from different races of aliens? You know, like, I don't know, the reptilians fly the triangles, the Nordics.
Or are we just living in the Matrix and our mind starts changing it so the Matrix changes to keep us on our toes?
I have no idea. These are the thoughts I like to ponder over a good campfire and a couple of glasses of whiskey.
Out in the middle of the woods?
Yeah, I like to, well, no.
So when you get abducted, everybody like, look out. What's got you, player?
I know you don't know, and I know anyone out here listening doesn't know. It's just a question, food for thought. I often wonder that, right? Very interesting. Thanks for sending it in. Yeah. If you have any sightings of your own or stories you'd like to share with me and Cam, please email the show, expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. You can follow me and Cam on all forms of social media. You can call the show, 817-945-3828. Cam, what have you got planned for the rest of your week? How's the plumbing going?
Plumbing's going great. The remodel itself's a bit of a beating, so I'll still be working on that.
You need to film those and put them up on YouTube and be like, Cam Hales, Bob Vila, this old house.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I do enjoy doing it, but only when it's going well, like everything else.
Do you ever become annoyed at the, like, that's a thing now on television, like TLC and stuff. They have a lot of these remodeling shows.
The magic of editing.
Or how they flip this house. They always make it look like it's so easy to go find a destroyed, decrepit old house, buy it. It's so easy to just fix it up and flip it and make cash.
Yeah, it's real easy if you've already got cash to start.
But I'm saying the whole thing.
You know how to become a millionaire?
Yeah.
Start flipping houses as a billionaire.
But you know what I'm saying? Like, they make it always look so easy. I'm like, well, the reason the thing has just been sitting there on the market forever is it's pretty much totaled.
Yeah.
Nobody wants it.
You'd be better off bulldozing it and just building a new one there.
And then the other thing is they have the man or the woman. It's always a team. And they just... I don't believe it. Like, they look like their hair is fixed. They got good makeup on. They got nice clothes on. They got new work gloves, a brand new looking hammer. Sometimes the price tag's on. They're like, we're about to demo this wall. And I'm like, no, you're not. Come on.
I judge
people. There's a crew behind the scenes that's doing this, right?
I judge people by if they grind the grip off the face of their hammer. So, like, when you have a hammer, when you buy it brand new, you see how it's got all that grinding in the front to make it real sharp? It's supposed to be to where you get like a grip on the nail. That's also the best way to meat cleaver, like just meat tenderizer your finger or anything
well,
else.
Well, that's exactly what a meat tenderizer looks like.
Exactly. So if you don't grind that off, you're not like a real carpenter because you don't want to – I don't even want to tell y'all what – they call them Peter tracks is what they call that when you leave a good indention in the wood like that. So you don't want to do it with a meat tenderizer head. So you'll see those people carrying those. They got brand new nail bags and they've not even ground anything off their hammer. You're like, what are you doing on this show?
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. That annoys me. I'm like, dude, I don't believe that you're doing that. I don't believe it.
Yeah, I'm with you.
You got a crew. Show the real crew.
Let me see the people really doing it.
Yeah.
Okay. I should. I need to post a few pictures of this misery that I'm going through, but I'll show it when I'm done.
People like it. People love it when you're achieving great heights. They also love it when you're failing.
I'm failing a lot, so y'all would really get a lot of love out of that.
You get a lot of clicks.
That's right. That's right.
All right, folks. Well, that's about all the time we have for this show. Till next time, stay safe. I'm Kyle Filson. He's Cam Hale.
Peace, y'all.